I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for murders that defy explanation, mystery seeking exploration, and shocking secrets that will leave you breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops. And neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Listen up, Friar faithful. 97.3 The Fan's Padres Roundtable is on the air.
Unbelievable!
It's time to discuss everything going on with the Padres. The 97.3 The Fan crew is here for the most in-depth discussion on the Friars in our weekly Padres Roundtable, delivered by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. And now, here's your host, Ben Higgins.
Well, here we are again. The Padres need help at the back end of their offense. The trade deadline is a week away. It should wrap things up in again for a great roundtable. Now, we got a whole hour of commercial-free programming to fill right now. It is brought to you by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. It really is pizza royalty. I'm joined by another assortment of my colleagues here at 97.3 The Fan. We're kind of mixed and matched today. Chris Ello is right here next to me. Braden Suprenant, Sam Levitt, our Padres pre- and post-game show host. Always nice to have you, Sammy.
Oh, good to be here.
And then my other colleagues from the morning at the end, Stephen Woods and Paul Reindel.
Hello.
So,
how about Sam Levitt just moving right in and taking Paul Reindel's spot?
Yeah, in the center cut?
There's no assigned seating here.
Well, look at this. Except for Chris. Sure.
I just wanted to see him squirm a little bit.
The yellow light across your foreheads is incredible.
Not a problem for me. I'm a little taller.
All right, let's begin with a general state of the Padres. Padres are 3-3 since the All-Star break now, but have picked up ground on nearly every NL playoff contender over the past week. So, do you consider this a successful start, Chris, to the second half of the season for the San Diego Padres?
No, not necessarily, because they played two teams with losing records, although the Marlins have been better. It was interesting, though. Last night at my softball game, several of my teammates came up and said, Padres just cannot beat bad teams. And I said, no, nothing could be further from the truth.
They love it.
That was only the second series all year that they've lost to a team that currently has a losing record. And the other one was to Arizona, and they're a pretty good team too. So, you know, by and large, the Padres have done a great job at taking care of business. But I just see trouble on the horizon, Ben. And I'm sure we'll talk about this, but the next 32 games, 29 are against teams with winning records, and they have not fared well against the winning teams. So I think judgment day is at hand.
Whoa.
All right. The negative perspective there. Paulie, the name of the game at this time of the year, though, is to maintain or pick up ground when you're already in a playoff spot, and the Padres have done that. So why shouldn't we be celebrating how they've started this second half?
I guess I'm just more of a glass half empty guy by nature. So I kind of lined up with Chris and his answer there. You know, you go 3-3 and I'm looking at it and going, yeah, you've gained some ground. Could have gained more if you took care of business and didn't drop 2 out of 3 to the Marlins. Look, right now, for me personally, the way I'm kind of taking these next however many games they have between now and the trade deadline is just get to Thursday, because I feel like it's going to be just two totally different scripts from now and what the team looks like next Friday.
I'm looking for some optimism. Is there any glass half full people? I'll skip over Woods.
It's you. We'll just ask yourself.
Just yourself. Get out your rag and your polish and get to work.
I'm going
to
give Sammy Levitt a chance here.
I don't know that I have a glass half full attitude towards the start of the second half. To Chris's point, you face two teams with losing records and you're only 3-3. And look, this Cardinals team has not played well that they're going to face starting today. However, it's a Cardinals team that's going to have a lot to play for because they're in this race and they've got the team holding the final wild card spot in front of them the next 4 days. I do look at it glass half full as far as this season to this point, and we just talked about it on your show. You consider the pitching injuries, you consider the offensive struggles, the bench issues, all these things they've had to deal with. And they have more than weathered the storm. They're right in this thing and would be in a playoff spot if the season ended right now. So start of the second half, no, not glass half full, but I still maintain a pretty glass half full attitude when you look at the first 100 plus games, which I know is not the question.
But. Braden, is it not true that play 500 ball on the road, play winning baseball at home? That's generally the recipe for a successful season. They played 500 ball on the road here to start this road trip. Your thoughts on this past week?
That's why I'm not like upset about it, because you want to play about 500 ball on the road. I know it's the Marlins, but I'd have to go back and look at the numbers. I can't remember the Padres ever going down to Miami and having a successful three-game series or four-game series down in Miami. It just seems like they never really do that. I think it's frustrating that you got Sandy Alcantara right after he's been struggling the entire year. I think it's frustrating that you lose a couple of close games where you had opportunities to win. But at the same time, if you come back from this road trip and you're 500, and you don't lose too much ground on the Dodgers, you're back to where you started. So from that perspective, I'm not upset. And again, until the trade deadline passes, I'm still optimistic that there's going to be a couple of moves here and there that are going to improve this team. Because if this is the team that's going into the post-deadline half, yeah, the roundtables are going to be rough for the end of the season.
Well, and we can talk about the trade deadline, and we'll mention Dylan Cease, and he's obviously had his ups and downs, but the pitching has been more than good enough for the Padres to win games. And we were just talking about it on our show, Woods, so I want to kind of continue the discussion with everybody here. How surprised are we and should we be that the Padres' offense has struggled so badly this season, considering they got all-stars in Machado, all-star in Tatis, Gavin Sheets has been a revelation out of nowhere, Xander Bogaerts has actually been good for the past month and a half, Luis Arraez is not having his best season, but he's not terrible, he's hitting 280 or whatever it is. How shocked are we that this is actually a bad offense?
I mean, I'm surprised. I think we had a lot of bad luck too. Jackson getting hurt a couple times, missing some time. A lot of the stars have missed some time this year. You love the numbers that Manny's put up, but you also kind of expect a little bit more from Manny. You feel like he's left some out there, certainly. But I'm surprised. I didn't have the highest of hopes going into the season, but it was mostly for the pitching. And the pitching has really surprised me. The offense, you let yourself dream as a baseball fan that the offense will figure it out and game will slow down for them. The ball gets a little bit bigger and they start to find those gaps like they did when the season started. They looked unbeatable, and man, it's kind of, you look at Jackson Merrill and his quote, a few weeks into the season, we don't feel pressure, we apply pressure. And it's like, no, now we feel pressure. I know they look like they're feeling pressure. They're not applying pressure like they used to. And a lot of the breaks aren't going their way like they were. So I don't know, man. I see a lot of call for a lot of guys' heads, out there. Victor Rodriguez being one of them. I don't know that I fall into that category yet. There's still some season left to be played. Nowhere to go but up, honestly, in about seven or eight of the categories that they are near the bottom in.
Chris, what about you? Should this be such a surprise? Did A.J. Preller, miss the boat in putting this offense together? I just feel like none of us really called it out at the beginning of the season saying, the offense is really going to be the problem for the Padres this year.
Yeah, so I would say I'm surprised for sure that they're as low as they are in so many categories. A lot of people pointed out, even when they were 14-3, that this team lacks any kind of depth at all. And that has really played out all season. The 7-8-9 hitters, I think they had a good weekend in D.C., and that was the first time that had happened in months and months where the 7-8-9 had contributed. But the thing that I did not expect, honestly, was that Fernando Tatis Jr. would become such a normal player. And that's what I feel he is, at least on the offensive side. And, instead of a dominating player, I don't think he's the last 3 months, he's been the kind of guy that I envisioned. And I think that's part of it. Arraez's average isn't as high. Merrill's step back maybe could be predicted in the old sophomore jinx. But I didn't predict this from Fernando. He doesn't scare me up at the plate the way I used to be scared by Fernando.
We dreamed on a healthy Fernando Tatis Jr. for many, many seasons. We did. And the tinkering, the constant kind of changing, the Cal Ripken, four different stances and four different ABs. It's a little bit odd for him. And But yeah, the dream of a healthy Fernando. We have a healthy Fernando, as far as we know, right? Healthy enough to be out there every day. And credit to him for the way he's played defense this year, 100%, and helped you win so many ball games that way. But yeah, Chris, you're absolutely right, man. We dreamed on this, and now, you know, he doesn't strike fear yet. And there's still some games to be played, but he doesn't strike fear yet like he used to.
Paulie, we'd get a lot of pushback from Mike Schilt, who will be on our program tomorrow, if he heard this conversation about Fernando Tatis Jr. Because, you know, he would tell you, again, Woodsy mentioned the defense, but the plays he makes on the base paths, what he does to make the team better. It's hard, Chris, to lay this on the feet of Fernando Tatis Jr.
Yeah, let's not forget, like, in April, we were saying, oh, he's putting up the MVP season finally. Like, here it comes. And then he cooled off, and the rest of the offense cooled off as well. To your original question, though, like, I'm not that surprised that the offense hasn't been great this year, because while Xander Bogaerts has, like, been a revelation over the last, like, month and a half now, and given, like, putting together what's going to be a pretty good season, it looks like, nobody expected that. Nobody. Like, everybody, myself included, the book was written. You're not going to get anything from Xander. We actually have gotten some good production out of him. The problem is, like, guys like Fernando and Merrill, who you just expected would put up all-star seasons again, and they're just not. Manny's probably the only guy that's giving you about what you expected. So you were thinking, if Manny and Tatis can carry you, not really sure what to expect with Merrill. And then the injuries, he missed a lot of time, like sophomore slump, whatever you want to attribute it to. You were really only like one injury or one of those core players having an off year away from being a really bad offense, which is kind of what they are. We weren't expecting anything out of 7, 8, and 9. Going into the season, catcher, you're like, we're not going to get any production out of that. Who's playing left field? We still don't have answers to those questions. Gavin Sheets has been a good surprise. But really, in general, I mean, the Stars are going to – it's such a top-heavy team that was put together, offensively at least, that if those four guys are not all firing on all cylinders, it's going to be tough to scratch some runs across.
97.3 The Fan Padres Roundtable, presented commercial-free by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. It really is pizza royalty. Braden, I'll ask you, should we have seen these offensive struggles coming at the beginning of the year?
I think a little bit, but not as much as they struggled this year, like Chris said, with how bad they have been in offensive statistical categories. But, you know, to go along with what Paul said, if you build your roster around six guys, I don't care what six guys those are, you got three other spots in the lineup, and those six guys know when they go up to the plate, I better get a hit here or nobody else is going to get a hit. And that you can't hit like that. I mean, it's not possible. So they are, I think, adding extra pressure to themselves, because how many times have we seen the Martin Maldonado, Trenton Brooks up at the end of a game? I mean, pitchers know how to navigate. It's like, oh, well, even though Jake Cronenworth's probably not as good as some of the other hitters in his lineup, I would much rather face the next two guys coming up than face Jake Cronenworth. And, you know, let him get through and whatever, and we'll attack the bottom of the lineup. I think the fact that the roster construction is so top-heavy has made this team as poorly on offense as they are. And again, it's not because they have average guys at the bottom. They have below average players at the bottom of their lineup and coming off the bench. And I know, you know, we talked about it a lot last week. Paul said it with Trenton Brooks. You know, I think Kevin Acey said it best in the daily newsletter. For San Diegans, like, it's cool to root for the guy, but at the same time, you can't win with this guy. And in every game that you roll him out there, is you're just asking to lose.
Let me follow up then. You mentioned the lack of depth. Chris brought it up as well. Sammy, I'll start. I brought it up right at the end of our show. The Padres, we dreamed in spring training on guys like Tirso Ornelas, or maybe Oscar Gonzalez could come up and contribute, Trenton Brooks, Jonathan Perlaza. There were all these guys that looked like they had the ability to maybe come up and not be a star, but be a capable hitter on the major league level. No one they have brought up from AAA. No one has done anything, including Luis Camposano, who still doesn't have a hit this year. Do the Padres, and maybe we need to discuss this further, but is there a fundamental problem about having their AAA team in El Paso? We hear about the Hitters League, and the PCL doesn't really mimic the major leagues enough. I don't know if there's anything that they can do about it, but it's becoming a trend, Sammy, that these AAA guys are coming to the big leagues and doing nothing for the San Diego Padres.
I don't know. There are a lot of teams that have their AAA teams in the PCL. NFL and in that environment. I don't know how much I blame El Paso, but to your point, they have not got a lot out of that group at AAA and all those names. And hey, we talk about it every day during spring training. It's really easy to fall in love with a lot of guys during spring training and sort of dream about how they can contribute. And Ben, to your point, it just hasn't happened. I mean, really, out of the whole group of guys that came in on either minor league deals or sitting there in Peoria as AAA players with a major league invite to spring training, there's essentially one that has really surprised you and contributed, and he's done it in a major way, and that's Gavin Sheets. Yep. But aside from that, yeah, I mean, there's no way around it. They just have not got really anything from that group and from the El Paso Chihuahuas, those guys who have come up. And I don't have a great answer for it. I don't blame it on El Paso. I hate to say it. I blame it more on just the players and I guess the quality of player that's down there right now. That's as nice as I can put it, I guess.
I think a lot of people, maybe even AJ Preller included, might have been looking through some Merrill-colored glasses as well heading into the season, where we're thinking, hey, we just saw it last year. This guy just came up, learned a new position. He was an all-star. Like, you were hoping to get even a shred of that again. Like, hey, let's try this. Let's just throw him out there and see what happens. The Jackson Merrills, those rookie seasons, they're once in a long time coming. You couldn't expect it, but I do think we might have all maybe even subconsciously been thinking, hey, we just saw it last year. Just plug a guy in there and see what can happen.
I also can't believe the fall of Eggie Rosario down there too. Did he get hurt? Because he's down in rookie ball now. I mean, he was so bad in El Paso, they sent him to rookie ball. I don't know if he got hurt or not. So if he did, that makes a lot more sense. He's hitting .220 in rookie ball. I mean, he was a guy that a couple of years ago, or maybe it was last year, he came up and hit a couple of home runs and had some good pop, and people thought he might be battling for a team spot. I mean, that's another guy that's just completely disappeared.
We were talking about in spring training with Eggie that he had showed so much promise, and he rips up lefties enough that you got to figure out a way to get him in the lineup. That's why he was going out to left field. It's a great point.
And he's just disappeared.
And Chris, I'll be fair. I'm more of the glass half full. You're more of the glass half empty. When it comes to minor leaguers coming up, you have to be a glass half empty. Most guys from AAA are not going to succeed. But this is beyond the old, yeah, it's a step up. It's tougher pitchers. They're getting nothing from anybody is kind of crazy. That none of these guys came up and had a hot stretch. I mean, Bryce Johnson's the only one who's really done anything. He really wasn't down there. They picked him up in the middle of the season. Fortunately, Gavin Sheets never touched El Paso, because it is simply, it's like the curse of El Paso this year, that anyone who walked into that ballpark has no chance of succeeding on the big league.
What did El Paso do to you? Austin Hedges, man.
Is it possible that something behind this was the unrest with ownership in the offseason? And I only say that because maybe the Padres just decided to skimp a little bit on roster spots number 18 through 35, rather than really getting some guys that can play. Because we've just seen that these guys haven't really been able to play other than Jose Iglesias, and even he hasn't been a great threat offensively. He's been so valuable defensively. Is that part of maybe why this team is lacking depth this year?
Well, the interesting part about that is how many times do we see the recipe of not addressing problems during the offseason and let's just cram for the test of the trade deadline and try to make all the moves of the trade deadline, when you had, like, 3 or 4 years ago, you could have picked up Jock Peterson to be a DH. You could have picked up, you know, some of these veteran guys that got decent contracts but not gigantic ones and ended up helping out some other teams. And then it was like, we're going to go with the cheaper route, maybe the younger route, and then we get to the trade deadline, and now all of a sudden it's all hands on deck trading the entire farm system to try to fill 3, 4, 5 holes instead of only having to fill maybe one or two because you addressed it during the offseason.
And that's another part of it. They've traded so much of the farm system away, that's got to start adding up at some point.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, and I thought Brandon brought up a great point. The trades they made last year depleted them of position player depth that probably would have been just about ready. I'm not saying they would have been stars, but you would have had the Jacob Marcies of the world who looked promising to come up and maybe fill a spot. The Graham Paulies.
I don't miss Graham Paulie.
We just watched him for three days.
But you would have had maybe guys who were a little bit more prospect-y that could have come up and got hot for a week or two. Maybe. Not for sure, but it would have been a different type of player than what they've had coming up.
Being financially strained where you have to sign the Nelson Cruises and not like the mid free agents that are getting a little bit more money.
Jason Hayward.
When you sign those guys over the, and I mentioned Jock Peterson, that's the only name that comes to mind from a couple years ago, but you know, some of those middle of the road vets that still got something left but are going to cost you, you know, $8 to $9, maybe $10 million a year instead of the $1 million deals, is that hurting the pod?
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, I will say to Braden that I don't mind the strategy of not necessarily trying to fix everything in the offseason with signings and leave yourself with some flexibility to figure out, okay, where truly are our problems? And then at the trade deadline, you've got a better idea as to how to address them later in the season. However, and this kind of leads me to one of my next topics, Padres have flexibility. And as they approach the trade deadline, we're hearing more rumors about payroll and luxury tax. Woods, I'll start with you because I already know your answer to this one. How concerned should the Padres be about the MLB luxury tax and the fact that they're already over the second threshold? They're facing a lot of penalties, not just financial, but draft and in the future, and potentially harming future seasons by whatever they do at this trade deadline.
How concerned am I?
Yeah, how concerned should the Padres be?
I don't know what their books say. All I know is that Petco Park is full every single night. Owning a baseball team and being a fan of a baseball team is a quid pro quo. You give me good players, I'm going to come watch you guys play. And the fans have done their job. They fill Petco Park. They buy the merch. They buy the banana pudding, some of us more than others. And they are invested fully in this team. And I think every fan just wants to know, our ownership group, yes, they have invested. They have, no question. Are they still invested? Will they still invest? And there's just so much uncertainty with everything Chris mentioned in the offseason. We just don't know. You know, we don't know what their abilities, where their abilities lie. You know, Peter, you had no doubt. You had no doubt what he was going to do. He was going to throw caution to the wind and go do whatever he had to do. Is this ownership group committed to the same thing? Are they able to? I have no idea.
It's a big test.
It's a huge. This next week for John Seidler is massive, I think.
Should you be committed for 2 years because of the CBA coming up? Does that factor into ownership decision-making?
Go crazy.
Like, how are the rules going to change? Is there going to be a luxury tax? Is it going to be a salary cap? Are they going to increase the thresholds? Right. So maybe all of a sudden you're under, like,
go nuts.
There's a lot of that stuff that we don't know about that maybe they know behind the scenes about planning for the next couple of years too.
As sacrilegious as it may sound, and I think we all here love Peter Seidler, are they not in this predicament a little bit because of some irresponsible decisions they made that also involved the luxury tax and going over and spending on players that they probably should not have spent on in the past?
Indeed, so, man, but we say it all the time, you know, that milk is spilled, you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube. These are the issues that you have to deal with. And again, I would understand, you know, if people are like, well, you know, you guys aren't really coming out to watch the team. I mean, there's so many teams in baseball that have really, really good teams that get 18,000 a night, not 45,000 a night. So again, it's hard to sell to the fan base, I'm going to have to tighten the old belt this year. And it's like, we're not tightening our belts. We are showing up for you guys.
It is frustrating, though, that no matter how many people show up at Petco Park, Chris, that they can't expand their TV market. They can't expand their local TV revenues the way even, you know, a mediocre, like a Chicago White Sox team will always have way more in TV revenues, even though their ballpark is going to be three quarters empty every single night. That's an advantage that the Padres will never have.
Yeah,
never say never, but now.
Right, you just talked about a new collective bargaining agreement, but I think Braden said salary cap. I don't think that's ever going to happen in baseball. I don't think the players are ever going to agree to that. They'll just as soon retire the sport, unfortunately, because the NFL does have it, and the NFL does have revenue sharing.
And yesterday, every NFL team got a check for $462 million. Isn't that nice when everybody's payroll is about $250 million? It'd be great if baseball could operate the same way.
But who's that nice for? That's nice for the owner who just pocketed $200 million.
It's also pretty nice for the fans of even the world's worst teams who can still spend the same amount of money as the rich ones, I think.
Then it comes down to how well do we draft? How well do we develop? How well do we coach?
How well do we manage our money?
How do we manage our money?
Isn't that what it should come down to?
Yes.
That's how it should be.
I mean, you know, right now the Padres are up against it. Honestly, I think more because of the luxury tax situation than anything. They don't want to have to pay penalties on top of everything else. Well, and just comparing to the Dodgers, that's not a thought that crosses their mind. So, and we're going to find out just how tight to the luxury tax and the penalties they are in the next 8 days. Woods mentioned it.
AJ is in there pounding his fist on the table.
He'll
take them all.
So this, financial perhaps constraints with the luxury tax has led to a lot of speculation that the Padres will be a buy and sell team at the trade deadline, which could involve moving a key piece like Dylan Cease. And we heard a lot of those rumors popping up this week. The teams have inquired. The Padres have listened on Dylan Cease. Sam, do you think a buy and sell approach could actually be the right strategy for the Padres this week?
I do. I think in order to improve some spots in this team that are pretty glaring, and I think we all agree on that offensively, AJ needs to get creative. And if that means – now, what's interesting to me about the Cease part of it is I wouldn't think a team that's trading for Dylan Cease is flipping you their starting left fielder or their starting catcher.
Right.
So what gets interesting is, okay, you can trade Dylan Cease. Who are you getting back? Is that more of a fourth outfielder type, a bench guy from somebody else's team, or is it prospects that you're
you can flip?
Right. Or you feel better about flipping guys from your system because you're replenishing? That's the interesting part to me. But I'm in on that strategy. Because
what does he make? If you're trading Dylan Cease, like, it's not purely salary dump because he's a free agent.
No, you save about $4.5 million the rest of the year.
Mm-hmm. Now, and you have to weigh, right? You have to weigh, where am I going to get those, innings from,
and those three more wins from
potentially.
Buster only said Charlie Morton. You want Charlie Morton on the team instead of Dylan Cease?
The thing you have to I go back and forth of, like, should we just squeeze this lemon?
I know.
Squeeze the lemon that we have and let him walk at the fourth round comp pick.
And there is a version of things if you trade Cease and you open up a pretty big hole in your rotation. No matter what you think of Cease and his effectiveness, he does eat
up. He's durable.
Yes, and he's durable. Well, you better hope that Michael King comes back and is good. You better hope that Yu Darvish holds up. You better hope that the Bergerts and Kolicks of the world hold up. It's a risk, but maybe it's a risk they're willing to take.
So much needs to work in their favor, and it's why I said last week, I'm not sure that the production, the value that you get back for Cease is going to surpass. It's much more easier for me to wrap my head around, Cease figuring it out, because we've seen it. We know he has that stuff in him.
We're asking that of the offense, right? We're asking the offense to just figure it out, turn it around. The same can be said for Dylan Cease. It's in there. The stuff is not wavered even a little bit.
How would you evaluate Dylan Cease on this team in terms of, we're starting the playoffs? Let's just where is he in your rotation?
Short leash.
What is he pitched to? If you just look at his numbers and you watch him pitch this year, what rank of starting pitcher is he on our team?
Four, right?
So let's think about it from this
King,
perspective.
Pavetta,
right? Like I'd
Darvish.
Probably have him four. He's probably pitched as good as a four.
I agree.
So I don't think we should. I don't think the Padres should trade Cease unless there's some deals that might work out in the future.
Yeah.
But let's entertain Buster Only's Charlie Morton idea.
Right?
Is Charlie Morton a four? He's kind of like a four or five. So it's not, to me, with Dylan Cease, I think we're looking at him of what he has been and what maybe he can turn around and be that ace guy. It's not like you're giving up an ace right now. You'd be giving up a four, and his production right now is like a four. Now,
but what if he goes in Monday and shoves like we talked about today? What if he goes and absolutely shoves against the Mets?
Two starts in a row. He hasn't done it two starts in a row.
Right?
We looked at him against the Dodgers.
Two starts with one. You can't get two without one.
He had it against the Dodgers,
right? It was
and
nasty.
We're like, okay, look, he's going to turn it around.
He's back.
And then he didn't. And then they said the same thing as Washington. Hey, look, this guy shoved. He's like, and then he you know, he looks okay. Yesterday in Miami. Yeah, but
like, let's not act like he got completely shelled.
But, so right, the, right, right,
but
right.
five
right.
innings and two
but you have
runs.
To, in my opinion, to look at the Dylan Cease thing, you have to look at it as how do we evaluate on him on our team as he is right now, the current player that he is. If we think he's a four starter, then we got to go pick up a four starter in the process. And if that means getting some bats, you know, I'm not gonna be angry if the Padres get a left fielder and a DH, and Charlie Morton's our four instead of Dylan Cease.
I think I agree with you ultimately, but
I don't want to trade him. I just want to make that clear.
If the offense had performed up to capabilities, what would Dylan Cease's record be this year? Is an interesting question. I mean, is he 5-5 or what is
his record? Probably
he's
three
and ten right now. He's 3-10. Yeah, is he 7-6?
Very possible.
Is he 6-7?
His record is definitely way better.
Could have won yesterday.
Yeah, right. he pitched well enough to win yesterday.
So again, we're all traumatized by what happened in the playoffs last year with Dylan Cease. I'm right there with you guys. It makes me nervous as hell to throw him out there, but I know he's got it in him. So it is a very, very big risk to trade him. The risk of not trading him. What are we risking? That you can't get other pieces? Okay.
Right, yeah, that's why I said it last week. It's like I'd rather have him give me a bunch of innings for the rest of the year and have him walk.
It's tough, man. It's
than,
a tough
like,
call.
You know, have Charlie Morton show up and be our four, and all of a sudden we're relying on him in a playoff series in Philly.
Cease at least has ace stuff in him. We've said it's absolutely.
But
I don't know that Morton does.
I want to push back a little bit, Braden, on the Charlie Morton, because you're right. You're putting them next to each other on a mound in spring training, and you clearly go,
Dylan.
I want that guy when you play Dylan Cease. But you're not asking that. You're asking for a pitcher to come through for a couple of months. Now, does anybody remember? I was trying to look up the numbers, and I couldn't get which Padres pitcher started the most wins in the second half of the season last
year?
Perez? I mean, did any of us want him on the team at all when they acquired him? You're trying to find someone who can be effective for you for a couple of months, and that could be Charlie Morton. He's actually had some playoff success in his past. He may be better than Dylan Cease over the next 2 months. Is he overall a better pitcher? Of course not.
No.
At this stage of his life. But you're not – Dylan Cease is not signed past this year. And I would imagine, Chris, if they trade Dylan Cease, they will acquire a starting pitcher, probably not one with as much pedigree, but one that may be as effective as a Martin Perez at the end of the season for the Padres last year.
One thing that, you know, I like about, you know, floating the Dylan Cease option is that we're trading a guy who's pitching like a number four, but I think we can ask for ace stuff in return.
I agree.
And that's always a nice position to be in.
Yeah.
So,
good point.
You know, I understand why his name's out there. I understand why Jay Cronenworth's name is out there, because I think they can reconfigure, you know, some payroll structure. And I think that is an important thing to them. Jay Cronenworth is not my first trade option, but he's got 5 years left on a contract that they might be able to work something else. I still think the best asset they have to trade is Robert Suarez, and I haven't heard his name mentioned a whole lot in the rumor mill. But I think what you're saying is going to happen.
Passan had it yesterday as his number one, like his the most valuable asset to trade.
Yeah, I think he is. So
is Suarez.
You know, but then again, their bullpen has won 30 games this year. Their starters have only won 25. So do you take a chance and trade any of that bullpen?
I know.
That's got you where you are.
The three horsemen doesn't have the same ring to it as the four horsemen. You know what I mean?
They
become the three stooges. That'd be bad.
The only thing they do have in the minors is they do have a lot of bullpen depth in the minors from what we've learned the last week.
Now we've seen some of it come up, and you know, I think you can let yourself dream on the stuff of a guy like Eduardo Nunez, but my God, throw a strike, mix in a strike every now and then, you know? Like,
I have no doubt that Adrian Morejon or Jason Adam or Jeremiah Estrada could effectively close games for the Padres.
Agreed.
Who's coming in, though, in the fifth inning
when
there's a runner on base and you need to keep that runner from scoring, because you can't then put Adrian Morejon in if you're now relying on him to be your closer.
Is it Wandy? Is it Yuki? Is it Kyle Hart? I don't think it is. And what a valuable, valuable stud Adrian Morejon has been.
I also think that if you were to trade a Suarez, you really need those three other guys to continue to be as good as they've been. And they may, but that's an assumption based on how much they've worked. I mean, again, I'm not trying to be doom and gloom on them. They've been so good.
So good.
But we do see, if you watch enough baseball, there's sometimes attacks on a bullpen when they've been used as much as they've been used. And then you're saying we're going to probably use those guys even more, those three.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
So it's scary to me to deal from that position of strength, but I would understand why they would do it.
Remember that other teams are all talking about the same issues, though. Is our bullpen going to hold up? Is our starting pitching going to hold up? The Padres aren't the only ones that are dealing with this. Ultimately, the question is, and I think we discussed this in an earlier roundtable, do you trust A.J. Preller to make these decisions? Because as Paulie said, this is going to be a very complex trade deadline.
Yes.
Like, he needs to get all the GMs kind of in a room, in a circle, a round table, essentially, of GMs, and discuss it all at the same time, or play the greatest game of phone tag ever, because he's going to need guy on hold, like the scene in Moneyball, three GMs on hold as he's trying to pull off these
deals. I'll trade you Cease if you give me that guy on that team.
Hold on 1 second. All right. Get so-and-so on the line. Get so-and-so on the line. This is going to be one of his trickiest jobs ever, I think, at the trade deadline here.
Right? And he's got to negotiate it with the potential constraints of the salary cap, or not the salary, the luxury tax.
Yeah.
So it's really complicated. I think, I don't normally say this, but I think the next 8 days could be as interesting as any eight we've ever had.
And every part of this discussion, as we look at every scenario and trying to find all this, he's going to have to take a risk somewhere. I mean, you're taking a risk on all of these moves, whether it be keeping Cease, trading Cease, keeping Cronenworth, trading him, keeping Suarez. And every one of those moves where you send somebody off is, now we got an extra hole we got to fill.
But haven't we all agreed that AJ has done some of his best work when he's had a few more shackles on, and some of his worst work when he's just been given a blank check to go out and do whatever he wanted?
With the Cease stuff, I honestly, even though it's apples and oranges in that it was off-season versus in-season, like, it feels a lot like the trade Juan Soto debates that we had in that off-season. You're like, how can you improve a team by trading Juan Soto?
They did.
Worked out pretty well for them.
Good point.
It feels a little bit like that. You're like, wait, I know he's not having that great of a year, but like, we're already kind of looking for some starting pitching. Now you want to deal Dylan Cease? Like, it doesn't, we don't see it yet, but it's why I hate trade deadline season, because it's so hard to like come up with trade scenarios as it is, and then now you're talking about three-team trades, prospects.
Well, wouldn't it be cool to go into the trade deadline 1 year and just say, we need some bullpen help, and we've got, you know, three or four guys we can unload to go get it, right? We have not had that luxury, you know, yet here. I think about the Dodgers, and they need massive help, but they have the capital to do it, and they can afford to make mistakes. They can give. And here's what's going to drive me crazy is when they land Johan Duran or Emmanuel Clase for their 38th ranked prospect.
And Mason Miller.
And Mason Miller for their, you know, 37th ranked prospect. And you're like, why are we giving DeVries for a rental of Ozuna when they got, you know, it's hard.
Once he's out, Eugenio Suarez. Come
on in. Exactly.
Exactly.
It's going to be, and that's the other thing you got to worry about too, man, is that there's two other teams in your division that are actively also looking to improve right now. So it's going to be a wild 8 days.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, real people tell their stories live on stage.
I burst into tears. And I wasn't sure if I was crying because I hadn't been kissed in a really long time, or if I had just never been kissed like that before.
To hear fascinating, heartbreaking, and sometimes hilarious stories from astronauts, teachers, farmers, and people just like you, follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.
7-3, the Fan Padres Roundtable, presented commercial-free by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. It really is pizza royalty. Let's take a breath here, get to our seventh inning stretch. And today's question, a non-baseball version, is in honor of the start of Comic-Con going on here in San Diego. Paulie, who is your favorite superhero and why?
Batman. Easy.
Batman.
Yep. The easy answer is because I can't name a whole lot more.
Not a superhero guy.
Not a big superhero guy, but as a kid, always liked Batman in particular. Had
the Adam
coolest
West version okay with you, the TV guy? Or do you need one of the movie guys?
Adam West is fine. Whatever. Christian Bale, the best, though.
Agreed.
I think for Batman, he had the coolest technology, like the Batmobile, all the stuff that he had was really cool, and he didn't really need like the X-ray vision, the flying. Like, he just was brute strength, going to kick your ass and look cool doing it.
Sammy Levitt, favorite superhero and why?
I'm not a big comic book or movie guy, so this is tough. I'll go with Superman is Clark Kent.
Supermom.
Right? That's Clark Kent, right?
Yes.
Yes.
I'll do that.
I just saw the new Superman movie. Very entertaining. It was good.
Oh, I heard many reviews that it was terrible.
Have they gone back and remade the first one? Where are we on Superman?
It's just back to a new timeline. Just
I've heard both personally and on social media that it was terrible.
Oh no,
you liked it?
I liked everything it. I saw was like a lot of good, not great.
Yeah, it was campy fun. It was comic booky, and I enjoyed it. My son wanted to see it, so I went with him.
You're a superhero anyway. See
anyone. Braden's favorite superhero.
Batman's probably the coolest. If I had to pick one. Same thing with, like, Paul. Those Dark Knight movies are pretty cool, watching those. Christopher Nolan making those off of a lot of the heist stuff off of the movie Heat, which is an all-time great movie. So from that perspective, definitely Batman. I'm like these two. I'm not super into superheroes, but I'd probably pick Batman.
Chris Ello?
Yes, I welcome everybody in town who's listening that is enjoying Comic-Con. I personally have never stepped foot near Comic-Con.
I've been there once.
Yeah, I think it is something I should experience, but I haven't. I was just talking, thankfully you brought this up, and I thought of Iron Man.
Iron Man's cool.
I don't know if it's Iron Man himself or just the Robert Downey Jr. portrayal of Iron Man. I really enjoyed that movie. I enjoyed watching him. And the more I think of Robert Downey Jr. in Iron Man, the more I picture that guy.
Wow, thank you very much.
I don't know if they look alike.
I've heard Robert Downey Jr. before. We had a lot of similar habits back in the day. Well,
I'm not pointing to that, but I feel a little similarity.
You
there.
Also have a similar disdain for authority.
Fair.
As the Iron Man, Tony Stark.
Like, let's be honest. Tony Stark will today.
No,
he just
would not.
He would not be on the round table.
I worked 4 hours.
Yeah, I'm not doing this. So he'd be gone. So I don't know how much. But that was mine too.
Iron Man.
I'm not like my kids are. Taylor loves Spider Man. Bo loves Spider Man, and it's cool. And I watch the movies with Tobey Maguire. It's hard for me to wrap my head around Tobey Maguire being a big badass superhero, but I did it and it was pretty good. But for me, I saw the first Iron Man and was like, all right, I get it now. This is incredible.
I think we need to bring a little diversity into our selections here.
Catwoman,
what do you got?
So I enjoyed. I thought the Black Panther movie
was
really, really good, and I really like Black Panther. But being a Marvel fan, I'll go with Black Widow because Scarlett Johansson is fantastic, and she has no actual superpowers either. She's just smart and really athletic, and just kicks butt all over the place.
Black Widow's outfit, much as anything.
I mean, she does have a good costume as well.
Okay.
She has a good costume.
He has a one-track mind, and if you know him like we know him.
costume, he says.
They all have costumes.
I guess.
You're a deviant.
Fine, whatever.
But you like Black Widow's costume more than others. That's kind of interesting.
Black Panther, Black Widow. I like the black-themed superheroes.
Okay.
Anne Hathaway in the Dark Knight, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Fantastic.
All right. Let's
another great costume, Paul.
This is no longer a trade deadline question because I believe this trade rumor was debunked mostly yesterday by Mark Bowman for MLB.com, the Braves beat writer, who said, according to his sources, Padres have not discussed at all a Marcell Ozuna trade with the Atlanta Braves, as Hector Gomez had reported. However, it did get me thinking, and I wanted to get the panel's thoughts on this question. I'll start with you, Chris. How important is character when it comes to your baseball player versus production and winning on the field? What can you abide by for someone on your baseball team?
I can certainly abide by second chances, but for some reason Marcell Ozuna rubs me the wrong way. Whenever I see him up at bat, I can't help but think of what he was alleged to have done or did. And I think to the Padres organization, I hope if anything they take forward from Peter Seidler's legacy is an absolute insistence on guys who I think are, clean. And I don't mean, a PED thing. I'm talking about clean in the law area. Because otherwise, I think you have to draw that line. And I think it's been something that's benefited this organization. I think it's one of the reasons that the fans come out to Petco Park. They like that. And if you're gonna bring in Marcell Ozuna, then I'm not saying they are. I'm just saying if you're gonna allow that, then you should call Trevor Bauer. You should call Julio Urias. And you can just keep on going and going and going. And I think eventually you have to stop somewhere.
Paul, with 26 players on a baseball team, there's no team that you don't have to make some compromises. There's someone on the team who's done something you disagree with or has political or religious beliefs you disagree with. How do you reconcile that with cheering for your team and not just going, oh, I can't cheer for that team because so-and-so is on it?
Yeah, the lines get blurry. They definitely do. I think baseball players in particular, like across the board with athletes, like baseball players, they've been known to be dirtbags, like just kind of in nature. And I've, you know, you kind of like just brush that off to the side a little bit. But when it gets to like kids and wives and abuse, like, I feel like that's a pretty universal line to draw right there. Like, I don't care about somebody's political beliefs. I don't care about where they live during the off season. I know that gets a lot of play here. Like, I could care less if a player moves into his home in San Diego the day before opening day and is gone after he clears out his locker after the final game of the year. I don't care. Just show up and perform and play well is all I care about. But like, I can't stomach a Marcelo Ozuna. You mentioned guys like Bauer and Urias. Those are the ones where you're like, I don't want to ever even be in a position to like feel like I need to root for that guy. We played the hypothetical yesterday when we were talking about the Ozuna rumors, at least, and we're like, yeah, you can sit here and be like, there's no way I'm absolutely not rooting for that guy. Until you're at, you know, game two of the NLDS and he hits a home run, are you gonna leave the stadium? Like, of course not. And so that's where you get conflicted, and I feel like that's almost unfair to put onto the fan base.
I think the catch 22, Woods, is you could put together 26 of the greatest guys on earth. They give back to the community, stand up citizens, just terrific people. And if they finish third and miss the playoffs, I don't think you're going to have a particularly happy fan base. Where do you kind of land here?
Well, I mean, I talked about it yesterday, too. I wasn't in favor of that move. I mean, we all saw the video. It was pretty gnarly to watch. You know, forcing your fan base to have to do the mental gymnastics of, well, I mean, you know, this is what happened. I mean, I see it all the time from Braves fans. We all had to do it. Everybody's had to do it. We've had to do it a little bit with Fernando. We've had to do it with, you know, guys that we loved, you know, guys that you grew up watching, you know, but not everybody is Tony Gwynn. Not everybody is Aaron Judge. I understand that as well. It's really, really hard to do. But, you know, getting a guy with a degenerative hip who also happens to beat up his wife, I don't know. I'm kind of out on the whole package.
Braden, you know, Chris did mention second chances. How much does that play into it for you in terms of player acquisition, and how much does character matter in your mind?
Well, I think character matters when you're building a team to a certain extent, but at the same time, you know, I think you have to realize that it is in fact a business, and I do believe in second chances. I also believe that I'm not a person on this planet that can judge everybody else on this planet. I mean, people do a lot of bad things, and that's you know, that's not my place on this planet to do. We all got our own problems as well. And I'm not going to be the self-righteous person that tells everybody they're bad. And then meanwhile, you know, maybe cut some corners in my life or anything like that. I mean, I think a lot of people do bad things. I think that's up to them and their own character and figuring those things out. Do I want to have a bunch of team, like a team with a bunch of low character guys? No, I do not. But you know, it's an interesting thing because it's business, it's money, and it's winning. And not everybody's perfect. So to me, like, I think you have to look at it, right? I mean, I think you have to understand what the risks are, because here's the thing is it's not the grabbing this guy, and it's not like acquiring this guy. It's once he is part of your organization, if he does something again, you are now responsible for what he does. And now that's where you take on, I think, more of the risk. So if you're willing to give the man a second chance and you're willing to let him be a San Diego Padre and maybe, you know, say, this is how we do things here, just understand if he does something bad again, it's like that's now on the Padres organization for bringing him in. But again, I'm not into judging people. It's not my way of life. People got their own problems. They got their own things they got to worry about. I'm gonna live my life and try to do things the best I can.
It's the art from the artist. You know, we talk about it all the time. How do you separate the art from the artist? You know, is he a good baseball player? I mean, is he a good person? I don't know. Maybe he had a really rough night or two in his life. We all have, certainly. But, you know, for me, too, it's multifaceted. He's not good also. Right. So, like, why bring that circus to town? It's like Trevor Bauer. Trevor Bauer's not good. He's not good. So why bring the circus to town if they're not even worth it?
His talent doesn't outweigh the baggage that he brings. And that's honestly in professional sports what organizations are honestly looking
100%.
At. 100%. Is his talent better than the baggage that he brings?
Remember when the Astros went and signed Osuna? And we saw the video of Roberto Osuna. No, we didn't see the video, but we heard the gnarly details of what Roberto Osuna, and they're like, we don't care. We want to win a World Series. Everyone was up in arms. He went. They embraced him. You know, I think it worked out for the best for them. But yeah, as a fan base, you know, you have to. You're kind of in the trenches out there fighting for your guys, and I don't think it's a matter of judging somebody because my God, who am I to judge anybody? But it's like don't put me in the position I have to root for this guy when he's also not good.
Like, how do you root for Tyreek Hill every Sunday?
Yeah,
it's tough. Because he's done a lot of bad things too, but he's really good.
I root for him when he gets in the end zone, and then I go back to disliking the guy.
Right?
Does that make us all hypocrites?
Yes, I guess. I don't know what else we can.
Would this be a different conversation? If Ozuna had 20 bombs and was hitting 310,
right?
It might be. What I was gonna duck in is a little on the Tyreek Hill line. Do you think that the roundtable in Kansas City sits around and goes, "Boy, the Chiefs have brought in a lot of these character guys that aren't great," and we can name Kareem Hunt's the one that stands out, but there's many others. And they've won what, 3 Super Bowls and been to 5 Super Bowls in 6 years. Is anybody complaining in Kansas City?
Probably, but not, you
probably
know,
pretty quiet.
The winning. It's like anything, man. You know,
it's tough, man.
It reminds me of, I think, my least favorite quote of all time, baseball quote. Nice guys finished last. Leo DeRocher was
Leo
it?
Leo DeRocher.
I don't like to think that is true. I'd like to think there's a place in the world where nice guys can also finish first.
I like you're a glass half full guy. I like the phrase, good things happen to good people.
There you go.
So eventually, and the other thing too, like I was told in high school from my high school football coach, and I see it now every day, and I totally understand as an adult, it all catches up to you eventually, whether it's this lifetime or the next or whatever it may be. Eventually, this stuff catches up to people, and it usually has a way of working itself out.
Sammy, let's talk about quickly the last couple of minutes. Padres Cardinals 4-game series. This series is both an opportunity and a potential landmine for the San Diego Padres. They can knock a team out of the wild card race, turn them into sellers at the trade deadline, and then they can also give a team hope and make this a much tighter race and much more complex trade deadline. Pretty big series coming up.
It's a huge series, and it's a Cardinals team that is not playing well. They just lost 2 out of 3 to the Colorado Rockies, and that is a team you don't want to do that against, certainly. So they're not playing well. I think they've lost 13 of their last 18. Sonny Gray on the mound tonight. Sonny is a good pitcher, obviously. He's not been great, though, as of late. So
great
again,
against the Pods.
Well, that's the thing. Right? What does that mean against the Padres tonight? But, Ben, you're totally right. It's a really, really big series for St. Louis. I mean, they're still only 3.5 games out of a wild card spot. Their trade deadline status may be hanging in the balance, and they've got 4 games against the team that they're looking up at in the final wild card spot. So it's a big series, but, you know, and I feel like we've talked about this so much over the last couple of years. It always feels like with the Padres, it's more about them than the opposition.
Correct.
And I think that's true this weekend. I think that's true even depending on what moves they make at the deadline. It's about them, and they've got to find a way and kick this offense into a higher gear. But to your point, it's a big series.
I get the sense, Chris, that the Cardinals, maybe front office, wouldn't mind falling apart right now. It's like, can the Padres please just take advantage of that sentiment? Like, you know, we wanted to sell all year long, and our team hasn't let us. They're maybe giving us the window to do it finally.
I hope you're right. You know, the Cardinals have a lot of really good young players that we're going to learn about here in the next 10 days, and I'm sure they'd like to hang on to most of them. But from the Padres' perspective, here's all this series means to me. To this point, the Padres have beaten one winning team in a road series. This whole year. And that was Milwaukee, who happens to have the best record. But that's the only team with a current winning record that they've won a road series from. So I think this means a lot to them. If they can get 3 out of 4, they need this confidence. They need to feel good about themselves against a good team. But having said that, I've been watching us lose in St. Louis for as long as I can remember. Jake Peavy, Bruce Bochy. I mean, years and years and years of playoff series. So it's going to be a big challenge.
That trend has turned around a little bit in recent years, but I remember, I don't know what it was like, 20 of 21 that they had lost in St. Louis. And is there a time you'd least want to go to St. Louis than the end of July?
This is it.
What is we hear? 98 degrees and 90% humidity.
Mike Schilt will get a warm welcome. You know, he might be looking forward to it.
Not very hospitable.
We can ask about it tomorrow.
Yeah, we will.
All right, so we will come back next Thursday. Padres will have played 4 against St. Louis and then 3 against the New York Mets. Two winning teams who have been kind of scuffling of late. It should be very interesting. And next time we join you, it will be trade deadline, like in the final hours before the trade deadline. So who knows what will transpire.
Can we get a special camera next Thursday just on Adam Klug running around back and forth?
He's going to have to be feeding us all the notes during the show.
Can we have a trade deadline like
round table?
Thing?
We used to, yeah.
Shut up.
Like
Shut up.
We're out of time for the whole panel. Thanks for joining us on our San Diego Roundtable. Roundtable, it really is pizza royalty. So long, everybody.
What if everything you learn in history class was only half the story? I'm Dr. Harini Bhatt, host of Hidden History. Every Monday, I go where history gets mysterious. Vanished civilizations, doomsday prophecies, paranormal phenomena, and events that science still can't fully explain. On Hidden History, I treat these moments like open case files. Not myths, not superstition, just incomplete explanations waiting for a closer look. Listen to and follow Hidden History, available now wherever you get your podcasts.